Good morning, everybody.
As you can tell from the title, I'm going to talk to you this morning about what you need to know about brand protection as an in-house counsel, not what you need to know to become a master of intellectual property law. Now, I'm aware that you're going to have varying degrees of knowledge in this area, so what we will do is we'll start with some basics, and then later on I'll move on to some practical matters that you'll need to deal with both in your role as a legal advisor and as an instructor of IP professionals. So you'll see from the handout my topics today, which cover what are brands and how do we protect them and what you need to be aware of in relation to protection. I'll then briefly discuss domain names and social media. And finally, I'll discuss protecting your company cost effectively by identifying when you need to act fast or seek further assistance, because this is an area where firstly, time is often of the essence and matters can arise on your desk whether you like it or not. So firstly, what is a brand name? Well, we know that brand names are how we identify goods and services, and no doubt many of you work in companies that use multiple brand names. But in a legal sense, a brand name is simply a form of trademark, meaning it is a sign that a trader uses to distinguish its goods and services from those of other traders. Now, there are two ways to protect a trademark in Australia. The first is to use it unregistered in relation to your goods and services and develop common law rights. And the second is to obtain a trademark registration for that name in relation to specified goods and services for which you use the mark or intend to use the mark in the future. They are the two ways. They do not include the registration of a business name through ASIC. The registration of business names is required under the Business Names Registration Act 2011 by all entities who trade under a name other than their own name. It is a system designed to protect consumers and let them know the entity behind the name. It is not a system designed to protect brand owners. So in relation to the first method of protection, the user of an unregistered brand name trademark can develop and exercise rights in three different ways. Firstly, through a passing off action or misleading and deceptive conduct action, it can stop others using the mark or a similar mark if it proves A, that it has a reputation in the mark, and B, because of that reputation, other consumers are likely to be confused by the infringing party's conduct in using a similar mark. But there are two limitations here. One, the onus is on the plaintiff to establish both of those factors. Two, if the plaintiff has only developed a reputation in one area of Australia, it can do little about usage outside that area. So, for example, if your company has developed a reputation in retail shops in Victoria only, it's going to have difficulty stopping another person opening up a shop in Western Australia, for example, with a similar name. The second way the user of an unregistered trademark can develop and exercise rights concerns the recognition of ownership. If a brand name trademark has not been registered in Australia, the first person to continuously use that specific mark in relation to specific goods and services in Australia is regarded as the owner and therefore entitled to registration. They can therefore apply for a trademark registration, or they can challenge the applications for registrations or the registrations by other parties for the same mark filed after their first date of use. Thirdly, the user of an unregistered mark may have defences to trademark infringement based on either prior use of its unregistered mark or honest concurrent use of its unregistered trademark. Now, briefly, what honest concurrent use means is that the unregistered trademark has been used by that person honestly and concurrently over a period of time at the same time as the existence of a similar registered mark. So if your company has traded for 20 years in the state of Victoria under the same brand name and a trademark owner comes along and threatens an infringement action and says, well, we have a similar mark which we've had registered for 25 years, there's actually a good chance that your company can defend that action. However, there is one limitation here. The defence of honest concurrent use is geographically limited. That means if your company has only traded in Victoria and therefore only honestly and concurrently used its mark in Victoria, and it wants to rely on that defence and then, say, open up a store or a shop in Sydney, they're not going to be able to do that with the prior registered mark in existence. So that is the limits of protection for unregistered brand name trademarks, which leaves registered trademarks. Unlike unregistered trademarks, registered brand name trademarks are property. A registered trademark owner owns the exclusive right to use that mark as a trademark in relation to the goods and services for which it is registered in Australia. If somebody else uses that mark or a substantially identical or deceptively similar mark as a trademark in Australia in relation to the same or similar goods or services, the trademark owner can get an injunction and damages or a count of profits, full stop. They do not need to prove a reputation. They do not need to prove that consumers are likely to be confused by the infringing party's use. They just need to prove three things. One, the infringing mark was either the same as the registered trademark or substantially identical or deceptively similar. Two, the infringing mark was used as a trademark. This means that the infringing party was using that mark in an attempt to distinguish its goods or services from those of other traders. And three, the infringing mark was used in relation to the same or similar goods or services as those listed in the registration. So that is a much easier task because a registered trademark owner has much greater rights. Finally, before leaving this slide, I should mention that a registered trademark can also be used as a shield. Using a registered trademark for the goods or services for which it is registered will not be regarded as infringing any other similar registered mark because, put quite simply, a registration is a defence. That brings us to when should you, as an in-house counsel, recommend your company seeks trademark registration for its brand name. We've got a bit of construction going on next door, so we'll just have to, I'm sorry about that, we'll just have to work through the noise. Now, ideally, all brand names that can be registered should be registered. Companies often don't realise how important a brand name is to them until they're faced with a passing off action or a misleading and deceptive conduct action. Now, I know that sounds like door-to-door salesman's talk from somebody coming from somebody who works in the area, but it is true. However, I'm aware that your companies aren't going to register every brand name that they probably should, so to prioritise, I've identified five situations where it's of primary importance to recommend registration. The first and most obvious situation is when the company has started a new business or a new venture with a new brand name. Obviously, the business is new. The company will therefore have no protection through a pre-existing reputation. They are therefore vulnerable, and they are also likely to be spending considerable money on promoting their new brand name. It is therefore a very important time to recommend trademark registration. The second situation is when the company is seeking to expand trade into new locations or to provide into providing new goods or services. Now, this applies whether it be new locations in Australia or overseas, and I'll talk to you about overseas protection a little bit later on after the break. When a company commences trading in a new location, it may have no reputation in that new area. So, for example, a company may have traded for 100 years in Melbourne, but nobody in Perth has ever heard of them before. Therefore, if they open up a new store in Perth, they may have no reputation and no protection. And the same may be said for expanding into providing new goods or services. For example, a company may have a reputation in a brand name for providing sports equipment, but they have no reputation, say, for providing sports clothing, and they want to move into that area. So if your company is looking at such new ventures or expansions, that is again a time to look at trademark protection. The third situation is when the company is seeking to franchise its brand name or use distributors. More generally, I say these are situations when a company is using a third party to assist it in developing a reputation in a brand name trademark. I cannot begin to estimate how many fights I have seen eventuate out of these situations. The basis of these fights revolves around questions of ownership and trademark use. Now, as I've explained, a registered trademark is clearly defined property. Therefore, it can be licensed cleanly and easily with terms governing its use. You know who the owner is, you know who has a right to use the mark, and when they have that right. Dealing with multiple parties using anything other than a registered trademark can just be unnecessarily messy and complex. The fourth situation that I've listed on the slides there is when the company is seeking to trade online. Now, this applies to any company selling its goods or services under a brand name online, but to a lesser extent, also any company that commences running a website promoting its goods or services to Australian consumers. It is important for a company to get a trademark registration in this situation. This is because when a trader starts using a brand name trademark online on a website directed at Australian consumers, it is essentially using that trademark in various parts of Australia where the website's being accessed. So a company may have an effective business in Victoria, but by virtue of going online, it's using its trademark in Sydney, Brisbane and Perth, and therefore possibly engaging in misleading deceptive conduct or passing off due to the reputation of traders with prior marks in Sydney, Brisbane or Perth. And without a trademark registration, they may well have no defence. The final situation I've listed on the slides is when a company is seeking to sell its business. Now, unlike the other situations where registration is important to avoid negative consequences, I've actually included this situation for a positive reason. As a registration increases your company's rights and protection in one of its more significant assets, being its brand name, it can be a significant bargaining chip in a sale. You may be able to present to the purchaser, well, not only have we built up a reputation in this brand name, but we own the trademark in Australia. Now, in my previous life as a trademark attorney, this was actually highlighted to me by a local Melbourne medical goods manufacturing company. Now, for this company, we were seeking to register one of their more important brands. And whilst we were doing this, I received a call from the client saying, can you speed up the process because I'm looking to sell, which we did. Now, what that particular client had realised was that he existed in an IP-savvy industry, and the registration was going to add value to his sale. Right, now you know when to register. The next question is how to register for those of you who are brave and do self-filed applications. Trademarks are registered on a jurisdiction by jurisdiction basis, and the Australian government department that deals with trademark registration is called IP Australia, and you'll see the web address to their website on your slides. Now, IP Australia will take applications to register trademarks in hard copy and online. And to apply, you need three things. One, you need the trademark applicant's name and address. Two, you need the trademark the applicant intends to use. Three, you need the goods or services intended to be provided under the trademark. Now, that sounds pretty easy, and it is. However, there are three important points here. One, the applicant must be the entity who intends to use the mark or license use of the mark. Unless that entity is yet to be incorporated, in which case the applicant can apply to register the mark with the intent of later assigning that application to the new entity once it's created. That is the one exception to the rule. Two, if your company's most important mark for particular goods or services is a brand name, register it in plain text without any graphic elements. If, on the other hand, the most important mark that you want to protect is a logo, then register the logo. But do not register a logo with a large graphic element and tiny text that contains the brand name and expect you're going to get a strong level of protection for that brand name. When that mark is ultimately registered, and for the purposes of an infringement action compared with a possible infringer's mark, your registered mark is going to be looked at as a whole. Three, the mark must be intended to be used in relation to the goods or services listed in the application. This is absolutely essential. So for example, if your company only intends to provide retail services, but it accidentally registers the mark for retail goods, that registration will be invalid. So applying for a trademark is a simple process, but it is an important process. Mistakes made at filing can be hard to fix at a later date, and they can affect the subsequent validity of a registration. So attention to detail is vital. Now, some trademarks are more difficult to register than others, and some trademarks cannot be registered at all. Now, given that many of you have access to the in-house marketing departments that select brand name trademarks, it is wise to keep these marks in mind. Avoiding obvious problem marks can also save you costs down the track. Now, in relation to marks that are difficult to register, you may need to provide evidence of use or other circumstances to progress those marks through to registration. And although that often can be done, it can cause time delay and create uncertainty for your marketing departments and, of course, increase your external legal costs. Now, these trademarks that are difficult to register include descriptive trademarks, geographic place names, common surnames, and trademarks that conflict with earlier similar applications or registrations. Firstly, descriptive trademarks are marks that describe the goods or services that your company provides or a characteristic or function of those goods or services. So, for example, quick cars would be difficult to register in relation to vehicles or car rentals. Secondly, geographic place names, such as Melbourne Car Rentals would provide difficulties for the same goods and services. Thirdly, surnames that belong to over 750 Australians will be regarded as common surnames by the Australian Trademarks Office and will therefore be difficult to register. So, for example, Smith's Cars would be a common surname and difficult to register. And finally, trademarks that are similar to prior conflicting trademarks will present difficulties. So if somebody has already registered a similar trademark for similar goods or services, you can expect that you're going to receive an objection to your application from the Australian Trademarks Office. However, there are a number of ways to overcome such an objection, such as providing evidence of use of your company's mark, challenging the validity of the prior mark, or simply seeking the consent of the owner of the prior mark. So they are trademarks that are difficult to register. On the other hand, trademarks that cannot be registered include certain prescribed signs, such as trademarks containing the word ANZAC or the coat of arms of a government. Trademarks that are contrary to law, such as trademarks that contain graphic elements that infringe another party's copyright, and scandalous marks. Now, scandalous here means what it says. Scandalous marks have to be offensive to a significant number of Australians. It's not up to IP Australia to decide what is distasteful or immoral. So marks like Pommy Basher and FC UK have been registered. Knucking Futs was also recently registered for nuts. So there's a bit of leeway with marks that are suggestive of coarse language. However, on the other hand, there's much less tolerance of marks that essentially commercialise sacred religious terms. So, for example, Jesus has been refused registration, as has the word Mecca for women's clothing. Also, one more point on the slides there. Although today we are talking about Australian trademark registration, for those of you who trade in New Zealand, do beware that over in New Zealand there are significant restrictions on commercialising Maori terms and signs. There's no analogous legislation over here in Australia, but it is something you need to be aware of if you're trading in that jurisdiction. Now, before I leave it there, leave scandalous marks, is anybody actually offended by Pommy Basher? Okay, yeah, I see a nod over there. Yeah, that is an interesting case. That is really is a, that's a borderline mark. That's about as close as you're going to get to scandalous. And really, if a similar mark was sought for registration that used the word basher and perhaps referred to another culture or peoples, you may well get a very different result, because if you read that decision, it really is confined to its facts. And what the hearing officer accepted in that case was that basically Australians and the English were all long-lost cousins. You know, we like to poke a bit of fun at each other, and it's all a bit of fun and games. So I certainly don't see that argument being successful in too many other contexts, so just be aware of that decision. Right, well, we might leave it there and just have a 15-minute break.